The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. The Epilogue. So ends the story of the strange and evil experiments of the Invisible Man. And if you would learn more of him, you must go to a little inn near Port Stowe and talk to the landlord. The sign of the inn is an empty board save for hat and boots, and the name is the title of the story. The landlord is a short and corpulent little man with a nose of cylindrical proportions, wiry hair, and a sporadic rosiness of visage. Drink generously, and he will tell you generously of all the things that happened to him after that time, and of how the lawyers tried to do him out of the treasure found upon him. When they found out they couldn't prove whose money was which, I'm blessed, he says. If they didn't try to make me out a bloomin' treasure trove, do I look like a treasure trove? And then the general gave me a guinea a night to tell the story of the Empire Music, just to tell him in my own words, barring one. And if you want to cut the flow off of his reminiscences as abruptly, you can always do so by asking if there weren't three manuscript books in the story. He admits there were, and proceeds to explain, with asseverations that everybody thinks that he has 'em. But bless you, he hasn't. The Invisible Man it was took 'em, off to hide 'em. When I cut and ran for Port Stowe, it's that Mr. Kemp put people on with the idea of my having him. And then he subsides into a pensive state, watches you fervently, bustles nervously with glasses, and presently leaves the bar. He is a bachelor man. His tastes were ever bachelor, and there are no womenfolk in the house. Outwardly he buttons, it is expected of him, but in his more vital privacies, in the matters of braces, for example, he still turns to string. He conducts his house without enterprise, but with imminent decorum. His movements are slow, and he is a great thinker, but has a reputation for wisdom and for respectable parsimony in the village, and his knowledge of the roads in the South England would beat Cobbett. And on Sunday mornings, every Sunday morning, all the year round, while he is closed to the outer world, and every night after 10 he goes to his bar parlour, bringing a glass of gin faintly tinged with water. And having placed this down, he locks the door and examines the blinds, and even looks under the table. And then, being satisfied of his own solitude, he unlocks the cupboard and a box in the cupboard, and a drawer in that box, and produces three volumes bound in brown leather, and places them solemnly in the middle of the table. The covers are weather-worn and tinged with an algal green, for once they sojourned in a ditch, and some of the pages have been washed blank by dirty water. The landlord sits down in an armchair, fills a long clay pipe slowly, gloating over the books for the while, and then he pulls one towards him and opens it and begins to study it, turning over leaves backwards and forwards. His brows are knit and his lips move painfully. Hicks, little two up in the air, crossed in a fiddly deed. Lord, what a one he was for intellect! Presently he relaxes and leans back, and blinks through his smoke across the room at things invisible to other eyes. Full of secrets, he says, wonderful secrets. Once I get the whole of them, Lord. I wouldn't do what he did, He pulls at his pipe. So he lapses into a dream, the undying, wonderful dream of his life. And though Kemp has fished unceasingly, no human being save the landlord knows these books are there, with a subtle secret of invisibility, and a dozen other strange secrets written therein, and none other will know of them until he dies. The End. Read by David Russell. For Lit to Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.